Welcome.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Artificial Talk. I am Louis, your host, along with my co-host, Tristan.
Hello.
And today we are kind of taking a more improv-y approach to this to the show. We decided to take this episode to, instead of talking about tech news and all that stuff, considering there hasn't really been that much, and we kind of want to explore other topics of interest. So we were going to talk about our current setups on iOS and iPadOS, what apps we use constantly, same thing with Macintosh, and just our general workflows and how things are going right now.
Yeah, going to be kind of a little bit more of a different episode, whereas normally
more of just a conversation, just like informative and all that stuff. So I really want to start with iPad.
Yes. So I don't think I've ever said it on the show before, but one of the experiments I'm trying, and at some point we're going to have maybe a video about it, show a little bit of trailer there. One thing I've been trying for the past month or so is actually making the iPad my default device, the only device I use. It's been a interesting experience, to say the least, and I'll let Louis kind of speak on it first, and then I'll kind of do a deeper delve into it, how that whole experience has been.
Right. So I, at least, have been trying to... I've been trying to figure out how to use my iPad as my daily driver for a while now. And the one limiting factor that I found is that I can't compile my code on the iPad, whether it's C++, Java, Python, Xcode, like Swift code. And I know there's certain apps that allow you to do it, like Pythonista and stuff, but when it comes to installing my own modules and, classes that I need, I'm unable to do that, so that's where I find the limiting factor. But so far, if I was able to just do that, and like if I could just compile code on it, that's just the last thing that I need. And then my current MacBook Pro laptop could just be, my pseudo desktop computer that I leave at home, and I'd just be using my iPad. I love that. The iPad is, it's thinner, it's quiet, it's, the UI is not too bad. I love to do that, but I digress. I like to talk about what apps we use every day, though. That's something I really wanted to jump into. And I'll just talk about my home screen first. So I have a single screen for my iPad. I have the Today view on the right-hand side with Carrot Weather, Fantastical, and Battery, and Things 3. And then I have, along the first column, 5 folders, which just, I have Miscellaneous, Chill, which is just, games and stuff, not gonna lie. And then I have Creative Work, which is, your LumaFusion, your GarageBand Logic Remote, Procreate, basically just creative apps and stuff. And then I have Developer Tools, so I have Working Copy, Blink if I want to need to SSH into my computer, screens, private internet access, of course, got to get that VPN, and productivity. And then every row follows that same suite of stuff, so like creative work. So I have podcasts, Anchor FM, Discord, all that stuff that we use every day. And that's, I have one single screen just because I don't like swiping between screens on my iPad. I really hate that, honestly.
Yeah. I'd sort of take a different approach to that. I do have two screens, but in particular, the first screen, I have two folders only. Everything else is out in the open. Now, in terms of what I use, I don't use a lot of Apple's first-party... Actually, I shouldn't say that. I do use a few Apple first-party apps here and there. This is on my iPad. In particular, though, the apps I tend to use the most are, for one, Spark. I do use my email quite a bit, and Apple standard mail app, while it's okay, I use a ton of different accounts and all that, and Spark is just a lot easier to compile that all together. And as well as that, when I'm doing work or anything like that, I like to listen to podcasts, but I do that through the Pocket Cast app instead of the normal podcast app, because I just like a few features here and there, and then the syncing between my iPad and phone is in my opinion, a little better on the Pocket Cast app. It does work okay on the regular podcast app, but I find Pocket Cast just does it a little bit better. But I do use the iWork suite, actually, Pages, Keynote, and Numbers.
Oh, really? I was not expecting that, not going to lie to you.
I do. And while I do use Microsoft apps for a lot of artificial talk stuff, I tend to use these apps more on the iPad because I just find they work better. And then with my iPad set up, I have the iPad, and then I recently bought the Magic Keyboard. I pulled the trigger on it because I wanted a device that was a little bit consolidated. It could do a lot more. And unfortunately, as of right now, Microsoft Suite does not support the touchpad and keyboard as well. So those apps are here to stay for a little bit longer. But I'm also very Google centric. So there are a few Google apps on here, including Google Photos. I don't have Drive or Docs on here though, from Google, anything like that. I just use the Safari version of those pages, because I find that they work better than the apps do, which is kind of funny.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Just kind of does one of those weird things. In one of my folders, I do have sort of like, I have a sort of a creative folder, in particular Ferrite, which this is going to be the first podcast episode I'm recording using the iPad instead of a Mac, because I wanted to give it a little bit of a shot, give it a try in that field to see how it does.
Yeah, so if there's no audio from Tristan, that's why.
Very high possibility of that, although Ferrite as an app so far has been doing a great job. It's a great app. I can't recommend it quite yet. I haven't really had a chance to play around with it fully. Part of the episode last week was edited on Ferrite, though, so far I'm really liking it. I also do have LumaFusion as well, which I will be editing an episode together about using the iPad as a computer on LumaFusion. We're going to see how that works out, instead of sort of the normal suite we've been kind of working with. But other than that, my other screen is just a lot of folders going through all the different companies, like Google products. I've got Apple utilities. I've got Microsoft, just Microsoft apparently. My names are obviously very consistent, as well as an artificial talk folder full of all of our Microsoft suite stuff that we end up using a lot of the time. And then the 9 different messaging apps I have that walked over with me from when I was on Android. So kind of a wonderful thing there.
Did you just say 9?
Yeah, I've got, let's see.
Oh my God, Tristan.
Yes. I have 7 here on the screen here. And I know I have Skype somewhere around here and something else flying around, I'm sure, too.
God, why do you have so many?
So we talked about this. Oh my goodness. I'm not going to go down the Android rabbit hole, but Android has no consolidated messaging app.
No, I understand that, but why do you still have so many?
Because everyone I know that still is on Android still has all these different apps.
Oh my God, you can't just be like, hey, use this app instead so you can delete one.
Absolutely not. That's not how the world works. And unfortunately,
yeah, that's true.
We live in the US where WhatsApp is not, or maybe fortunately, depending on where you live, WhatsApp is not the dominant app here. In fact, iMessage is actually pretty dominant in that space. But
well, I think it's, for at least for where we live, I think it's just part of California.
Yeah.
You know, that because, you know, it's, you know, when you're 13% of your whole country's economy, everyone here kind of has a little bit more money than the rest of the country. So, of course, the more luxurious items will be used here than other parts of the country.
Right.
Luxurious in quotes, of course.
Yeah. So kind of looking at it that way, that's kind of my layout of folders. On my sort of the main app, I kind of Sparker one again, one of the main apps I use. I use the Files app fairly often. If I need to plug a USB in or even access a cloud storage of some sort, Google Drive, OneDrive, even iCloud Drive a little bit, I'll use here and there. Just whatever happens to be most convenient, honestly. And then Notability as well. I am a student, so I take notes using Notability. I just find it's easy, it's nice to use, and it's an iPad, so you can draw on it and all that sort of thing. And Authy, actually. So I use 2-factor authentication for most of my accounts. So Authy kind of has earned its place as a main place on the taskbar. So yeah, I think that's most of my setup. So
I want to talk about, okay, so you're on Notability, and did you use it in high school too when we had our iPads?
Yes.
Okay, so you've been Notability for a while then. I was also for all 4 years of high school Notability, and then this year in January, I switched to GoodNotes 5.
Yes.
And it's actually now the number one app in productivity. It's taken Notability's like spot. And Notability's been number one in productivity for the last 6 years, if I'm correct. Like I've at least
time.
I can recall it. always being number one, and now GoodNotes is number one. What's your reason for staying to Notability, for staying with Notability?
I think for one, it's familiarity. Like, it just, it's very familiar to me already, and I've kind of learned all the little gestures and all that sort of thing and how I use it. And I don't know if GoodNotes does it. I feel like it probably does, but like where you can turn written words into actual like printed text.
Yeah, you can do that.
You do that, yeah.
So GoodNotes 4 did it before Notability did, interestingly enough. Yeah.
So I don't, and I'm not gonna argue if GoodNotes 5 is better than Notability.
Honestly, they serve the same purpose.
Yeah. But I think it's just it's just familiar to me is why. Mm-hmm. We wanted to kind of throw it that way.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to make any sort of argument, I mean, like, Apple Notes is actually pretty good now for drawing things. I don't think it's better than either of those apps, and truth be told, but...
No. It's definitely more difficult to use to take normal notes, I would think. Like, I've tried before. It's kind of harder to use to take... At least I found, take notes and organize them in a meaningful way.
I will say one thing I end up using the regular Apple Notes app for a lot is actually scanning documents.
Yes, me too. Yes, yeah. God.
That's the one thing I use it for. I feel like it's the one thing that most people don't know exists, but it's actually a really nice feature, in truth be told.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't really make the argument between GoodNotes. I've actually never used GoodNotes myself. I just like Notability, but I think it's because it's just familiar to me. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about, if anything, I switched to Nebo, though. I was thinking about maybe that Nebo, as an option.
That sounds very familiar.
It's the app that's known for translating your writing into text.
I think I spelled this wrong because I put in Nebo and it says it's a child well-being monitor system. So I don't think I spelled, is it Nebo as in an EBO? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. I've tried this app too. I tried this one too, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that app too, but just because Notability is so familiar and because everything's kind of already there, I don't want to take the time to switch everything over. That's probably more the reason I stick with it than anything else. But yeah, I would say that's why I've stuck with Notability for so long. It's nice.
So for me, the reason I moved was actually because of the way Notability backs things up. I have almost lost every time I update my iPad or switch it out. I almost every time almost end up losing my Notability notes. And I'm not sure. And it's always when it comes to like the syncing process, because you know, like you can archive it into like Google Drive or Dropbox or whatever. And whenever I'm trying to go from that back into a different Notability app, like on a new iPad, I always end up having issues. Like, either it doesn't sync everything, or the folders aren't right, or just something random happens, and I have to manually move everything over, and I must say, it's a pain in the neck. And then I tried GoodNotes earlier this year, because I was like, okay, it's new semester again, new year, let's try a new app. And I kept Notability, I still have Notability on my Mac, because I still need to export whatever's left on there. But after using GoodNotes, and they have like templates and stuff, and it syncs through iCloud, so I don't have to worry about losing things. So like if I delete all my apps, they're still in iCloud, and then it has a built-in backup thing, so you can automatically have it back up the entire application to like a zip folder on your Files app, and it's super convenient. So like in case, you know, iCloud does ever delete anything for whatever reason, I'd still have a zip backup of everything that they can just import back into it. And then the one thing it also, I think GoodNotes does too, but Notability used the .note. There was their proprietary file.
Yeah, the proprietary file. Yeah.
And when I, freshman year of high school, I didn't know I should have exported everything to PDF. But now going back, I'm like, wow, I wish I had that. But I can't even open it now because it's been corrupted from the amount of times I've moved it on and off of an iPad through Notability and stuff. So like if I open it, it's just like corrupted file can open. I'm like, well, that's just great. just like a case I get nostalgic, I'm like, oh man, let's go look at my notes from like freshman year, and I can't because they're all note files and they're all corrupted. go ahead.
So I'm curious. Did you say what mail app you use?
Oh, so I Well, I've told you this story many times, but
yeah.
I, last year, I believe, maybe 2 years ago, I got super sick of the Apple Mail app. Just, it was having so many bugs on my Mac, on my phone, on my iPad. I could not get over it. So I tried Spark for about 3 months. I liked it enough to use it for those 3 months, but I didn't like certain qualities of it. And if I honestly, at this point, I cannot remember, but I definitely did not like the UI. And I think one of the bigger reasons for me to, switch was when dark mode came out June of last year, and Spark didn't have it until like January of this year or whatever. And I was like, well, no, I want dark mode now. So I left, because I was like at the time the only third-party app that I really used. You know, now I use, you know, Fantastical, Things3, and I got all these other apps instead of Apple apps, like first-party apps. But then I considered going to Airmail, which is like $50 on the Mac store, which is why I did not switch. So I ended up going back to Apple Mail, and I've stuck with it ever since. And then in my recent adventure to try to switch from Gmail to Proton Mail, I was unsuccessful because they do not allow you to use any third-party client on mobile devices, and you have to use their own app, which is not the greatest. So I'm sticking with Apple Mail until a worthy competitor comes along again. And I'm sure I'll try, you know, Airmail eventually or some other email app. You know, probably over summer when I get bored.
Right. I mean, it's kind of a funny thing because we all use like different mail accounts outside of like our artificial talk stuff. Everything else is basically its own thing, our own personal stuff.
I have like 8 email accounts, dude. It's wild.
I'm in the same boat as you. I remember there was a time I think I had up to like 7 different email accounts I was running, and I was just like, this is way too many. I finally consolidated it down, but...
Nice, yeah, nice.
But even then, especially... So I would say that this is more Google's fault, but they don't allow you to do push with Apple Mail, which is actually the one reason I won't use Apple Mail, is because I can't receive notifications for Gmail emails unless I want it to basically check every like 15 minutes or an hour or whatever. But since it's doing that every hour, even if no emails are coming through, that basically means I'm just wasting a ton of battery. Basically, it constantly poking to see if something's there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've tried a variety of email apps. The biggest issue is, like, the Gmail app, actually, I would say is a really good app. I like the Gmail app. But on the phone, it works great. When you get it on the iPad, and there's no app for the Mac, obviously, or Windows for the matter, basically, you got to use a web browser. And while that... it's not a huge thing. It's just one of those things I wish it was just built in and worked. It would just make notification specifically so much easier to deal with.
Right.
But that's why I'm on Spark now.
So I know you just mentioned, you know, push versus fetch and all that stuff. I actually didn't like push because I felt that I was getting too many emails all the time. Like I get like one email every 30 minutes, right? Then it got to the point where if I didn't get an email, I'd be refreshing my email client to see, hey, maybe I got an email, notification didn't come through. So like it got to a point where I was checking my email for no reason. I got into the habit of replying to emails as soon as they came in, which is very unhealthy when you're trying to focus on any other task at the time. So I actually ended up switching my settings to get new emails hourly. So the fetch new data, I set it to get hourly, and I turned off push completely from all my stuff and just to fetch every hour. Just because it's definitely reduced my reliance on the email app. Like I still send emails and stuff, but like I'm not checking it, you know, every 15 minutes thinking, oh man, maybe I got an email and I just want it right now. Like now I'm like, no, the world isn't going to end if I don't reply to an email immediately, right? Like, nothing is that important in an email. Like, I do get some where it's like, okay, I need to reply soon. But, like, the ones that are semi-important, I'll just flag them. And I'll wait until I have time later to deal with it. And, like, I'm just trying to not be always on my email or always, like, on iMessage or always on Instagram. You know, like things that give you, like, notifications or, like, general time wasters. like trying to get away from those just so that I have more time to do other things. So that when I do want to waste time, I actually have content to look at when I want to waste time.
Yeah, actually, so I have a curious question for you. What social media apps do you have on your phone?
Okay, so my phone.
Yeah, we'll go to your phone.
I have like none on my iPad because it's my iPad.
Yeah.
Fair. So my iPad setup is the same as my phone setup. You know, 6 folders going down, and then in the first column, and then just like apps and stuff on the sides. And then so for in my entertainment folder, which is my apps and stuff, I have Instagram as my first app, and then Snapchat, which I almost never use, but we have it, and then Discord. And then we have Apollo for Reddit, and then Twitter. And then on the next page, we have Facebook, Messenger, Skype, and GroupMe. But I never use any of the apps. And the only reason I have Facebook, a Facebook account is because of my school event stuff. They're always advertised through Facebook, and I have no other way of knowing them other than through Facebook. So I have to have Facebook. It's so annoying. But soon, hopefully, I'll be able to get rid of them and not have Facebook anymore. Oh, and then LinkedIn. I guess LinkedIn counts as social media, and I have LinkedIn too, yeah.
Yeah.
How about you? What do you have?
I think I pretty much have the same apps as you, outside of the fact I do not have a Reddit app of any sort. That is, it's funny, that's the one thing I never really got into was Reddit stuff. I
got into it a lot more over the past couple months just from... I don't know, like, I started looking at Reddit probably in around February of this year more often, and I've had my account for a year and 3 months now. I just never used it. And then I started following some, like, interesting subreddits, and now it's like, okay, well, I sometimes go there for news now. It's so funny.
Like, it's funny, when I do a lot of, like, sort of a DIY tech stuff. I do a lot of, like, stupid stuff you probably shouldn't do, but I do anyways, because it seems like it could... have a cool thing happening at the end, even if it totally wasn't worth it. And that's someplace Reddit actually gets a lot of attention from me, but I don't actively like look for a Reddit notification or anything to pop. I just go on the internet, and if Reddit happens to be at the top, I check it. But outside of that, I really don't use Reddit. I do use pretty much all the other social media apps, although I don't use them much for personal use. If anything, I tend to actually have them more for artificial talk postings than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Like most, I think actually all the posts that we've had from Artificial Talk have tended to be something I've posted up. That's the only reason I keep these apps around, is so that I kind of have that setup just right on my phone and easy to get to if I need to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like Snapchat, for example, we still don't have a Snapchat. I think 2 years ago when Willie and I first started, we both said we are never going to have a Snapchat setup.
I do not remember this conversation, but I'm glad we did have it, because Snapchat is kind of dead.
Yeah, we've never had a reason to set up Artificial Talk on Snapchat in any way, so we've just chosen not to. And I do have the Snapchat app, although I don't use it at all. In fact, the last time I opened it was probably about a month ago, and I might just kind of throw it away. But
hey, Snapchat didn't tell me happy birthday this year, and I'm really upset. Oh wait, I think I blocked Snapchat team actually, because I got so annoyed at their constant like holiday stuff. I was like, stop sending notifications. I don't care.
Yeah. So, and then basically the way my phone is arranged is actually pretty different from the iPad. My first screen is a mixture of apps and folders. I would almost say it's like 60-40, probably 60% apps, 40 folders. And it actually tends to be apps they're the apps I use the most. So for example, Pocket Cast is on the front screen again. I have my Maps app, because I do when I drive around. Yeah.
Same.
Always having easy access to that.
Okay, wait. Apple Maps or Google Maps?
So this is a tough question.
Do you have both on your home screen?
I do have both, and they're both in a folder.
My God.
And the main reason I do it is because... So Google Maps works great on the phone. And if you need to search for a restaurant, or literally if you want to do anything that is even slightly like, I need a map for something, use Google Maps. I use Google Maps. But okay. I have found, especially if I'm using CarPlay, for example, I'm in someone's car that has CarPlay, Apple Maps tends to work better. And that makes sense, because they're both Apple's. Native. Yeah, it's all native. That's the one thing. And I will say one thing about Apple Maps too, especially if you set up your calendar events, because Google or because calendars can't communicate with Google Maps, it tends to just send stuff to Apple Maps. So if that happens, I just end up using Apple Maps. Honestly, whatever just happens to be more convenient, but if I'm just using my phone as a phone the way it is, Google Maps is going to be used. It's just better. And offline maps. That's the other reason.
Yes.
I don't understand why Apple Maps doesn't have offline maps yet. Maybe it'll get it at some point. Maybe it won't. But Google Maps has it.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
I only use Apple Maps.
Do you have Google Maps, though?
No, I don't even have it installed.
Oh, interesting.
I only, like exclusively have Apple Maps. And I remember back when Apple Maps first came out, I remember when it was, like, 80 different services compiled together and people were getting lost everywhere. That's when I first like started using Apple Maps, but I wasn't driving yet, so it didn't affect me that much. And now that I am driving and stuff, I have never noticed an issue, but I think we also have to take into account that we live in California and the majority of these services work the best, not only in the US, but specifically in California, just because it's Apple's in California, obviously.
Right.
But I use, Apple Maps for almost anything. The only time I have ever not used Apple Maps and I go to like googlemaps.com, whatever it's called, maps.google.com, is when I have to, is if I have to plan a route, like with stops and stuff, you know what I mean?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because yeah, Apple Maps doesn't have that functionality yet and you can only put so many pins down. so I do that, last time I did that was like 2 years ago, so I mean, not super useful for me, like not enough for me. I don't use it enough for me to warrant having the Google Maps app downloaded. But yeah, restaurants and stuff, I'll typically just go to Apple Maps. I mean, the only time I've ever gotten lost is when I use VPN and it doesn't know where I am and then it gets really confused.
Yes.
But like, it kind of defeats the purpose of turning off the VPN. So I kind of just like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it only happened once, and then so far, it happened once 2 weeks ago, I got lost, because it was on VPN, and it took me, like, the complete wrong direction. But since then, it's been fine. And I think that just depends on the VPN, what server you're connected to, honestly. If you're connected to one super close, then you're probably going to be fine. But yeah, Apple Maps has been, I have no reason to not use it. I have my favorite restaurants in there and all that stuff. But yeah, Apple Maps has been, all around pretty great for me. Oh, also, I did try to switch to Google Maps. That's right. I switched to Waze. Oh, yes,
oh
Waze.
Goodness,
Waze. And I hated the voice control lady. I hated her voice. And then I tried Google Maps, and I hated the voice. So I stick to Siri and Apple Maps because of the voice. Yeah, go ahead.
I was actually going to say, Siri is one of the reasons I almost don't like Apple Maps a lot of the time.
Really?
She's gotten better, to be clear. I actually Apple Maps for the most part I think is pretty good. It's not great. Like I would say Google Maps is great and Apple Maps is good. Like I'll put it like that.
Okay.
There are more features in Google Maps though, like the offline maps, the add stops things. Think 3D view is far superior on Google Maps. It's objectively speaking,
well,
do it on pretty much every road.
The caveat here is that, Google's been doing this maps thing for like, yes, how long? For how much longer than Apple has been now? Like,
right.
How long have they been documenting the entire globe?
Right.
And Apple's been doing it for like, what, 5 years now?
Right. And I'm being fair to Apple. I think it's a great app, but I don't
it
think
just
it's
needs
as
a little
good
work.
As Google Maps.
It needs work.
Right. I honestly speaking, I think Apple Maps will always be behind Google Maps just because Google Maps had that sort of advantage of being first.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is, for me, Siri is by far one of the worst parts of maps because I just find her to be too inconsistent. Huh. But Google Assistant on Google Maps is just as bad because it's not native. I've kind of run into both of these because Siri is okay, but the problem is she's not able to do processing on the phone itself. That seems to be a big issue with Siri.
Oh, with commands and stuff. Yeah, I hate that.
Right.
I'm always on internet, but like I'm sure the times and I have been on times where I don't have internet and I'm like, really? You can't just do something for me?
Right. And to be clear, I'm not expecting her to be able to navigate me all the way somewhere without internet, to be clear. That's
no,
not what
just
I'm
like
saying.
Add a reminder. Oh, I don't have internet. I'm sorry.
Yes. That's innately an issue with Siri, but the problem is that does translate to maps a little bit, because that means even the simplest of commands she can't process on her own without the internet. Like, even, even like in maps, for example, I understand she won't be able to, if I told her get me to some place, she might not be able to figure out where that place is without the internet, but she should be able to do it pretty quickly if a lot of it was on onboard processing, and then just connect to the internet real fast to figure out where is this place. Like, that sort of thing, if you know.
Oh, okay, I see. I thought you meant complete no internet at all.
No, no, no.
Okay, I was like, if you were trying to do that, you'd have to have offline maps for that to work. Otherwise, there's no other way for this to work.
And to be clear, Google Assistant, offline, she can't do anything like that either, but at least it's pretty quick when she says, oh, I can't do it. Like, Siri has to sit there and process for like 60 seconds after she's been disconnected and say, yeah, I can't do it. And then you're kind of like, well, thanks. I passed the turn like two miles ago while I was trying to punch it on the map while driving. Like, and to be clear, don't do that while driving. But if you're on the middle of a highway, you know.
And there's no one around you. Yeah.
Right. Be safe about it. But it does happen. And then outside of that, I do have the Dark Sky app. I actually did forget to mention that on my iPad as well. I do use Dark Sky. I like the app. I've used it between Android and iOS. It's great. It's now dead on Android, so I wave it goodbye.
We say goodbye.
Yeah. It's a great app. I still like it a lot on iOS for as long as I think it's going to exist on iOS. I don't know what the plans are, but it seems like they plan on keeping it around. So it's still here. It still works great. The hyper-local weather is amazing. Finding out when it's going to rain 5 minutes before is amazing. It's just a great app.
I use Carrot. I love it. It tells me up to a minute before if it's going to rain. So, like, if it's not going to rain and then a minute later it's going to rain suddenly, it'll be like, you have less than 1 minute and it's going to start raining. So you can thank me later, right? Like, and then it rains. Like, it's so cool. I also just love the snarkiness when I go into the app. Like, right now it says, is there anything more depressing than the blooming flowers and cute baby animals of springtime? Okay, well, that's just kind of sad. But I mean, like, there's different levels of snarkiness all the way up to, like, it can curse at you.
That's actually really funny.
It's really funny, and, like, they're really funny. Like the further you go up the scale, the funnier they are. But, you know, at 8 in the morning, I didn't feel like reading, you know, the F word 4 times in a sentence. You know, like, I just woke up. I don't want to get accustomed to saying these bad words so early in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like drinking soda. Like, I don't want to drink soda before noon. Like, afternoon, like, after, like, 12 o'clock, it's fine to drink soda. But, like, I don't want to curse at 8 in the morning. I don't know why. That's just how I am.
So, I am curious. Do you have any, like, duplicate apps on your phone? Like, is there, like, a first-party app and a third-party app? Or do you have two third-party apps that do the exact same thing and you just have them on the phone in case the other one doesn't work or something like that?
Okay, so I did for a while when I'm testing new apps, I do this. So when I switched to Fantastical, I still had calendars just in case. When I switched to Things, I still had reminders. They're gone now, though. Right now, the only duplicate apps that I have are the camera app, the first-party camera app, and then Halide.
Halide, oh, interesting. Whatever it is.
Yeah. I liked the idea of Halide, or Halide, whatever, however it's pronounced. But losing the live photo aspect made me a little sad, because sometimes the best moments are after you take the camera shot. And like the little snippet of the video, like those are the best,
right?
Like someone's, I don't know why, but like I love having, like, taking a photo and then like long pressing, and then you get like a little 3 second clip of what was going on there. Like, that's really fun. Like, I really enjoy that. Only other thing I can think of is, oh man, well, I have obviously a bunch of bank apps just because,
right,
so many different banks. I don't think so. Oh no. I still have the native weather app installed too. I actually don't know why, but I still have the native weather app installed. And then the only other app is this app called Linkwise. It's basically like the home app, you know, like where you can control like home accessories and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it was made for the humidifier that I have, which syncs to the Apple Home app fine, But Linkwise can control all the same stuff, so it's like a preference of if you want to use Apple Home or a different home app. But I found software updates only work for the humidifier through the other apps. I have to keep it. But yeah, those are like duplicate apps I have on my phone. On my iPad, I think it's the same situation with Halide. Obviously, there's no native weather app, so that can't be possible. But yeah, I think it's mainly just the camera.
That's kind of interesting. I mean, I have a lot of different duplicate packs. In fact, I couldn't actually give you a number off the top of my head. That's the amount I have. Just kind of go... Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I definitely used to, but I... About 2 months ago, I ran out of storage on both my iPad and my iPhone. And I am so sad because of just the amount of photos I have. I have photos dating back to 2014, right? That's 6 years ago. And I always had them on my phone, not have to wait to download them, just have them download on my phone. And I always got the base storage for my iPhone and my iPad. But now it's like, okay, well, I guess I'll take them off of iCloud, but then they won't be there for me to just, yoink and send to someone, you know what I mean?
Right. It's funny, last week when I was talking to Patrick about that, he was actually talking about, we brought up cloud storage in particular. I remember one of the things he said was he basically has a hard drive where he just stores all his old photos, all his old backups, basically, and that's how he does backups. It's just an external hard drive, I think,
right?
Like 4 terabytes or something. That's
what I was thinking of doing, but I don't know how to organize these photos to keep... So, like, okay, the main thing I want to keep is the metadata, and I know if I just export it from photos, it'll keep it. Like, I know that's fine, but... I don't know, searching through photos and stuff, like, how am I going to do that if it's just in a folder? You know what I mean? Like, in a hard drive.
Yeah.
You know, like in photos, I can be like, search up a dog, and then I'll get my dog, right? You know what I mean?
Right.
I can't do that anymore.
So one of the duplicate apps I do have for that particular reason is Google Photos. Yes, Google.
Yeah, I tried that before,
you know what
too.
I'm talking about?
I know, but I don't want cloud storage for my photos. I want to just have them on my phone. But the issue is that at some point, I know this is a lose-lose situation. I just need to suck it up and either put them all in cloud storage and just stick with it, or put them all on a hard drive and just feel sad that I don't have them on my phone. I don't know which one to do, Tristan.
So Google Photos, here's kind of a cool little trick you can do with Google Photos. If you do upload all your photos to Google Photos, and then on your phone, you scroll through them all and make sure they all pop up as a little image, then they're on your phone. They're stored as a cache on your phone, and you can access them even when you're offline.
Yeah, but not the full image.
Not the full image, but like...
Yeah, photos is... I'm sorry. The Photos app is the same thing. I can look at them offline. I just don't get the full resolution, but I want the full resolution. I want the live, the live photo, little video. I want all the metadata there. I want it all with me.
Louis, I'm trying to help you here.
No, I know. I know. That's why I'm telling you. This is like, it's a lose-lose situation because I want everything, but I also don't have the storage for everything. So the only option that I actually have, Tristan, and it makes me sad, I have to pay for more storage on my iPhone and my iPad. That's the only solution to this issue.
You're going to be... You know, if you got a Samsung phone, you could get a micro SD card, throw it in there real quick, and then, got all the storage.
No, I know that, and don't think I haven't considered it for a moment. But, it comes back to the ecosystem. You know, like, my Apple Watch will be rendered useless if I leave, you know what I mean? My AirPods won't work the same way. Things that I use, like, I won't have AirDrop for my phone anymore. Like, these are big things that I use all the time. Like, I won't be able to download things into my iCloud downloads folder from my Samsung phone. You know, I won't be able to do these things that I do all the time just because, which is, makes me a little sad that I've got locked in this badly to the phone. At least for the Macintosh so far, the only limiting thing for me leaving is just the amount of programs that I have on here that I have to move over, which is going to be a pain in the neck. But... Yeah, I'm going to have to upgrade the storage. And I mean, like, it's not... it's only 150. Oh, that's not bad. Going from 64 gigabytes on the iPhone to 256 is only $150 difference.
Yeah, but at some point, even that 256 is going to run out, you know?
Okay, yeah, but that's that's quadruple the storage I have right now, right?
Yeah, but
so
if
here's a theory. Theoretically, Tristan, let's just say theoretically.
Okay.
It's taken me 6 years to fill up my phone, right, with all the photos and stuff, right?
Right.
Taking me 6 years.
Okay.
How much does Google? Okay, well, I don't want to use Google Photos. Let's say I use, I don't know. Okay, let's just okay. Well, how much is Google Photos? How much is Google Photos pricing?
Google Photos is unlimited, assuming you you downgrade the image to a slightly lower resolution.
I don't want to do that. I want like, full resolution.
So they limit it to, I can't remember the exact number, I think it's like 16 megabytes, which...
Oh, they limit you?
Yeah, it's a megabyte limit per photo. But it's per photo, though.
No, obviously.
Yeah. So like it's 16 megabytes per photo, but most photos you take on your phone go from around probably... 10 megabytes all right. to 20 megabytes.
Let's see. I'm gonna take this photo that I took a couple weeks ago, and we're gonna see. Oh, it's not that big. It is 2.3 megabytes.
Yeah.
But that's after it converts it to a JPEG. If it was, you know, the Apple high efficiency stuff, those ones are big files.
So I think Google Photos can read Apple's the Hike files.
Oh, really?
HIEC files. I believe it can. Don't quote me on that, but I believe it can read those files.
Okay. So I suppose I could do that, but my theory was that, okay, if it's $150 more, 150 divided by 6 years, assuming I don't upgrade the phone for 6 years, which obviously isn't going to happen, I upgrade like every year. It's $25 a year, basically.
This has become the economic breakdown of upgrading storage and versus cloud.
Google Photos... I have to search the pricing real quick. Oh my god.
Google Photos is free.
It's always free, really?
Yeah. So it's free. You could upload all your photos in their full resolution, all the videos in full resolutions. You would have to pay then for Google Drive storage, basically, is the way they do.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So
I guess that makes it's the same way as like iCloud storage. It's the same thing, I suppose.
Yeah. But it's basically the same as like how all of them do it. Like in that end, but they offer the free tier essentially, which is slightly lower the quality for everything else.
So then the only way for me to do this is to either pay for more storage on my iPhone or switch to an Android and get a micro SD card.
Pretty much.
I have crippling depression now, Tristan. Wow, even going to like 512 from 256 is only $200 difference.
So. To get back to the apps a little bit.
Okay, yeah, sorry, yeah.
So, as I said, basically right now, I'm trying to use LumaFusion and Ferrite as sort of my workflow, and I might incorporate a few other apps later down the line if I find I need them.
Mm-hmm.
But Lou, what do you use to, like, edit, the podcast and even when we get to eventually edit videos?
Okay, so for the podcast, I use Logic. I have a few other ones that I've been trying out. I have, Persona Studio One, I have, Adobe Audition, I have Melodyne, which I don't think I've used that one yet. I have Pro Tools First, Albiton 10 Live, like I have a bunch of them and they're all free, of course. Because they came with like hardware that I bought. But right now I only use Logic just because I like the interface of Logic. And on the iPad, I was considering using Ferrite or some other ones that you had mentioned. But I hate the UI, Tristan. They look so old. I don't like it. Like Logic has like an oldest look to it, right? But these look like they came out like the 60s or something, the way they look.
They do look older. I will say, if you were just looking for the functionality over the aesthetic, though, they do work fairly well. Like right now, I'm using Ferrite. And to be clear, like right now, for example, as I record, it's a very simple interface. It grayed out basically the entire background, and it's essentially it's a button, and like it shows when I'm peeking and all that sort of thing,
okay.
Along with like a headphone button and a few other buttons. But like, there's like nothing here. It's very simple. It just works, that sort of thing.
Okay.
That's for recording. To be clear, once you get into the editing part, the menus can be a little finicky to get through. But I think if you kind of get used to the workflow, I could definitely see it becoming easier. It's just something I'm going to be trying and then basically report back to you guys and see how that works.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've used Logic before. Like when I was using a Mac, I was on a Logic as sort of the main editor. I did use Audacity here and there. In fact, I would say I probably used Audacity a lot. Audacity.
Yeah.
Audacity is a great one. If you are like, we just start, our podcast was actually started using Audacity. It's a,
well, on your end, at least.
Yes, on my end, it was started using Audacity. It was, but it's a very good program. And in
I've definitely used it extensively in the past, and it's considering it's free, it's great. The only reason I was able to use Audition when we started was because I got it free through my job. And then now I got, you know, the Pro Tools from Apple. So,
yeah. But I was looking for free software at the time, and being on Windows, there wasn't a huge amount of editing software that was free, and Audacity just happened to be the one, and it works amazing. Yeah.
It has like so many options for plugins and stuff. Yeah. It just makes so much sense.
Even now, we will occasionally pull out Audacity if we need a certain sound edited or something like that, because the sheer versatility and the amount, as Louis said, the amount of plugins you can get out of it.
Yeah.
I don't think you can find anywhere else in a free app. So, so kind of just some cool stuff we use to edit the podcast every week, sort of thing.
Now, LumaFusion I have actually used before, just to like edit a small project. And it was very interesting, I will say. It's very much like Premiere, in terms of the way it's set up. Honestly, looking at it now, it kind of looks like Final Cut as well. It's like the basic video editor, if you can think about it. But I love the... It wasn't exactly intuitive at first, but once you use it over a project or two, you definitely can just use it for anything. Like, and then there's their buddy app, LumaFX, which is like After Effects, which is like Emotion. It's really like full-fledged video editing, and I know a few YouTubers have done 4K video editing on it, and it works, you know, kind of astonishingly well considering it's an iPad.
Right. And I mean, considering too, it's software that's built by a developer. It's one that I don't actually know how long LumaFusion has been around. I think it's been around for a fairly long time now, but has a lot of the same, like, you're not gonna be doing like super huge effects on it or something that you'd find in a bigger desktop version like an Adobe Premiere or Final Cut Pro type thing, or Adobe Effects for the matter. You don't have anything like that, although they do offer an app on the store called LumaFusion Effects, which kind of piqued my interest a little bit, but I kind of want to get into the flow of LumaFusion first. But it does kind of make the strong case that, theoretically speaking, you could do everything on your phone if you really wanted to. Maybe it's a little bit more cramped and not as quite intuitive, but
it theoretically does prove you could. You could. I mean, the same processor, you know, well, maybe not the same, but like a little bit upgraded in the iPad. But basically the same processor in the iPhone and the iPad mean that they can do almost the exact same things. The only difference being the size. Yeah, which is very, very strange to think about.
Yeah, and I mean, phones are... The other thing is, too, though, phones have gotten really big. I mean, if you have a modern flagship from any of the past 3 years, they're huge like phones.
6.5-inch now, and soon 6.7-inch.
I mean, the Samsung Galaxy Ultra is, like...
6.9,
I think, yeah.
Or is that... Might be, yeah. I'm not sure, but I think that sounds familiar.
Yeah, and then we also have we have folding phones coming out. Whether they're the true folding phones or just the hinge folding phones, you know, they're boosting screen real estate sizes by like double, basically. So now you have a 7-inch, almost like a 7-inch tablet in your pocket, ready to go whenever you need it to.
Yeah, I think it'd be really cool if we had, think of like a full size iPad or like a Windows tablet, like full size, right? Like 10, like 11 inches, 12.9 inches, right? And then it folded to the size of your current flagship, right?
Okay.
Like, me putting my phone next to my iPad right now, it's maybe half an inch short compared to the iPad. But if you folded it in half, like the iPad, it would be a chonky boy. It would be very chonky and it'd be very long, like even after folded. But I think it'd be definitely possible. And then we wouldn't... Do you think that would kill the tablet market if we had the same device, but be... I don't know. It's just interesting to think about, right?
I mean, so, like, that is some, I will say straight off the bat, I think if a phone could, let's say a phone could fold three times and you could make it as small as, like, a smartphone today, a 6.9 inch slab, essentially.
That'd be wild.
I think, honestly speaking, the tablet market wouldn't, it's not so much it would be killed by, I don't think the tablet market has a reason to exist, at least in its current form. Instead, you know, the idea of you marketing a phone that's like, hey, look, our phone can fold to the size of an 11-inch tablet or, like, you know, a 14-inch tablet, like, these huge screens, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, at that point, like, it's just a whole different market entirely.
Yeah.
Because that means every person could just do everything they ever want on their phone. They wouldn't have a reason to have a full-fledged computer anymore, theoretically.
I suppose it would just, you're right, it would just create a new market because there, those these devices would be very, very expensive at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Even as time goes on, they would still be expensive, I have no doubt in my mind. So we would still have tablets and phones for maybe the first 7-8 years of this new technology, just because, you know, you still need budget and stuff. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, I'm cutting you off a little bit.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm gonna ask a bit of a weird curveball question for you.
Uh-huh.
Are you more preference to the way that x86 applications exist right now, or do you prefer how ARM apps exist right now? So to kind of throw an example out, do you prefer the, like, Windows and macOS style of go on the internet, you download something, get it running, and it works? Or do you prefer something like iOS and Android, where you basically download an app from the App Store and it will run on the device?
Okay, this is very hard because I do both on my Mac. For a lot of my programs I can get on the App Store, if I go to their site and they have, like, if I go normally and I go to the website and I try to download it and it says it's on the App Store, I prefer to go to the App Store just because it means that not only I will have it, but if my family ever needs it in the future, they will also be able to download it for free. We don't have to pay twice or three times for however much you need for it, right? The only way that is kind of getting killed, subscription-based stuff, obviously. Right. That's the only way that part is getting killed. So I do both. I would say the majority of my apps right now have come from the internet, the normal way, go in Safari, go to their site, download the file, all that stuff. Just because I do so many different things, like I have like 30 apps in my creative work folder in my Mac, 30 apps in developer tools. Like, I have a lot of applications on my Mac. And a lot, most of them have just come from internet downloads. And I honestly prefer that, I think, when it comes to, you know, getting updates faster, and stuff like that. But the convenience of having the App Store and having it, you know, if I move Macs, I don't have to worry about moving license keys over. I can just download it and that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's certain, like, pros. There's certain pros and cons to each.
But if you had to choose one right now.
Oh, God. If I had to choose
one. That's it.
Jeez. Yeah. Oh, well, then I'd have to go with getting things online. Just because the market of, like, you can just get so many more things online than you can through an App Store right now. Especially the Mac App Store.
Yeah. So, yeah, to kind of answer the same question, I would probably say the same for now.
Yeah.
Unless the App Stores of iOS and Android become a lot more robust in the future. That sort of thing.
I mean, maybe. You never know.
Right. And we don't know what the plan is down the line, honestly. It's hard to say, especially since it looks like, you know, Apple's App Store and Google's Play Store are getting more, and they're obviously getting bigger and bigger every day. And arguably, you could probably find an app to do virtually anything you needed to do.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you could.
Those platforms, right.
Well,
maybe not as conveniently.
Maybe not on Mac OS, at least.
No. I was kind of framing the question more in the minds of iOS and Android because Mac OS and Windows both have their own respective app stores, but in truth be told, I actually will say for the most part, I think the apps on those app stores are not particularly good. A good example is the LastPass app on both those stores. They're both just terrible, like, from their respective app stores. like, you have a better chance of downloading it from online and getting that client running than you do getting it from the App Store.
Right.
Or, for the matter, there's another one I used to use when I was on Android, Verizon Messages Plus. It's just a terrible app on both those stores. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the way that they have coded or developed, or maybe because there isn't a huge market for those. They're just not good.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing I think iOS and Android have the advantage of, is those are the only platforms you're really making an app store for. And those platforms, for the most part, can't grab stuff from just online. And yes, I'm aware Android can do APKs and all that, but we saw with the whole Fortnite thing, where Fortnite came from outside of the Play Store, that was, honestly speaking, a terrible, like, it was just a terrible way to do things. Like, people got viruses because they would find links they thought were Fortnite and then they weren't, or on Fortnite's own launcher got compromised at some point and people were still downloading it, so of course it, like, ruined a bunch of Android phones.
My jeez.
Yeah. And part of the problem is the fact that these app stores are, in a sense, monopolized. There's two of them, and essentially they have to pay that sort of tax to be there. Like, if you're charging money for your app, you're getting basically taxed every time someone buys your app.
Yeah. Well, that's only for the first year, though.
I think you're all...
I thought it was only for the first year on the Apple App Store.
I believe it's always. I believe you're always... taxed at 30%.
Really?
Yes, I believe so. And I'm not 100% about that. That's at least the way the Google Play Store operates, which is why Fortnite, the Epic Games decided to bring Fortnite as its own APK outside of the Play Store. And it's the reason that companies like Netflix and Amazon will actually not let you sign up for their services through the App Store. At least that's my understanding of it. Now, granted, that a lot of that has changed in the past few weeks. In fact, I believe Apple said that they would allow Netflix, for example, to allow subscribers to go through the App Store.
Amazon too.
And Amazon. And they wouldn't let you, they wouldn't tax that 30% for every subscription per month, sort of thing.
And honestly, I think that needs to be done for every market that Apple is a direct competitor in. So, like, Spotify and Apple Music, right? Like, that should not be 30% taxed because they're direct competitors.
Yeah.
Because Apple isn't a competitor in every single market, right? Like, true. They're not.
But, like, the Play Store, for example, and the App Store are both billion-dollar industries as far as it goes. Like, for, you know, Apple or Google to say, you know, oh, we're going to allow developers to kind of not get taxed, that they're giving up essentially an entire market. In a sense.
Yes, but you avoid antitrust lawsuits.
Also true.
So that it's kind of that's what I'm coming at, is you want to avoid these lawsuits. These lawsuits will cost you a lot more in the long run, especially if you get proven, you know, wrong. Because if you get proven wrong, then you're gonna have to lose all your 30% tax cuts.
True. But either way, to kind of go back to that whole app thing, I would still say at this point, desktop apps are probably the dominant platform.
Yeah.
ARM is just not big enough yet. That is honestly the truth of the matter.
Yeah, once ARM, I don't think will get the support it needs until ARM is faster than our current processors and ends up getting a very large migration from our current processors.
I was just going to say, honestly.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're fine.
Honestly, I was just going to say one of the biggest issues I find with ARM is that, as you said, they're not very powerful. But, like, a good example was when Lenovo and a bunch of those other PC companies released always connected PCs. They were some really cool PCs. I remember Qualcomm and Lenovo were trying to tout the 24-hour battery life and always connected to LTE and all that sort of thing. And I remember in particular, like, those devices weren't very good. Like, their battery wasn't great. Their connection constantly caused a bunch of issues because it just wasn't ready yet. Like, and the apps were limited because everything is x86 on those platforms. And the best they could do was essentially emulate those apps inside of the ARM, sort of the ARM code, which was not great, as you can probably tell. But... I don't know. I'm interested with ARM just because we've seen the evolution of iOS and Android to the point where they can replace your computer now.
Yeah, it'll be very, I don't know, you know, all this talk about these processors getting faster and faster and faster than our laptop computers. It's very interesting to see, where are these processors going to go? Are we just going to keep them in these mobile devices? You know, I don't think if you're innovating this much, you'd want to. But I mean, who knows? Maybe you do. Maybe Apple will just start selling their own processors, and you can buy an Apple processor like you can buy an Intel and an AMD one.
I mean, Samsung's doing that now with their Xenos processors.
Yeah, it would be crazy if that happened.
It'd be really cool to see more ARM processors exist on the market. Now, granted, AMD has made such a leap. I'm almost
oh
like,
my god, there are leaps and bounds ahead now. I don't think with the progression that they've made just in the last couple months alone, I don't think ARM processors are going to get very close to beating AMD anytime soon anymore.
Yeah.
We were close when Intel was the top, but now they're not. So who knows what's going to happen, mate.
Yeah. But I think that's kind of all the apps we use here. Again, if my audio doesn't appear, you know that I was using an iPad for the first time, so this will be kind of a cool experiment to do, though, a little bit. So
So there's no episode this week, that's why.
Or if there is one, we'll just post up Louis's audio.
Yeah, it'll just be my audio, so yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just don't mind the awkward gaps. Oh, gosh.
Good lord.
Well,
all right.
We'll see you again next week, and we'll, you know, like us, subscribe to all of our platforms. We're on, I don't know, we're on so many platforms now. Tristan, take it away.
We're on like 10 different podcast platforms, so if you can't find us on your platform, you can
email us. It's too small. It's too small.
Yeah.
Or email us and we'll try to get on it. We'll do that too.
If I don't get any emails, it's because I worked very hard to get on as many platforms as possible. But also remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yes.
So you can see when we post up new episodes, when we get some new content up as well. And, you know, just connect. You can message us through those platforms and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. And, yeah.
That's
I don't
it.
Have anything else to say to that.
Yeah,
so,
me neither.
Yeah.
That's it for this week. So thank you for joining us. I've been your host, Louis.
And I'm Tristan. Oh, one more thing.
Oh.
Also tell us if you like this format of episode.
That'd be great.
It's a bit of a different type of episode from our
usual past. Yeah, our usual news topics.
Yeah.
I don't know. I had fun. Did you have fun?
No, it's a fun episode.
Hopefully the viewers liked it, and I guess we'll find out soon enough.
All right. See you guys later.
Bye. Have a good one.
Bye.